Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Hello, welcome to the Autism Detective. This is Patricia Lemmer, the author of Outsmarting Autism. My guest today is Dr. Jessica Tran, speaking to us from California. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Patty.
I'm so thrilled to have you on board today. Jessica and I really bonded in the fall at the American Academy of Environmental Medicine Conference, where she was my guardian angel and showed me around and introduced me to all kinds of amazing doctors and medical practitioners. Jessica, you have a long time standing with AAEM, which we'll talk about. But first, let's talk about who you are. You are a naturopathic doctor, correct?
Yes. I'm licensed here in California and Arizona.
Oh, in both states. And yes. I think it's confusing to people what a naturopath and a homeopath and a allopathic doctor are, and we hear about MAPS doctors and complementary medicine doctors and alternative doctors. Let's start with your training as a naturopathic doctor is unique, and I want people to understand what kind of things you were trained in and when you went to Bastyr University. Could you help us understand that?
Yes, so my undergraduate background is similar to most individuals who go the traditional medical pathway. And in fact, that was my trajectory before I decided to pursue naturopathic medicine. And many different factors influenced that, including my own health. And a lot of doctors have health challenges that reshapes their framework of the healthcare system, and we're looking for a different perspective and alternative. So I did a bachelor's of science in biological sciences, and I also did another degree at the same time in called social ecology. And that's also a unique multifactorial perspective on society, crime, environmental influences. And so that also shaped my perspective of how I viewed healthcare. When I was in my undergraduate training in my last 2 years, I worked in the emergency department as a clinician researcher. So what we did was we enrolled patients for clinical trials, and what influenced me at that point was that it's very dynamic in the emergency department. Most people are coming in for an acute condition, but a lot of times these conditions could be prevented by better diet, and some people didn't have access to good care and primary care, prevention care. So that shaped my viewpoint in wanting to pursue a profession that focused on public health and also focused on prevention and the individual care of a patient. I had grown up with homeopathy in my childhood, and also had a very naturopathic upbringing. So that also influenced my decision to pursuing naturopathic medicine. I was on like the track to pursue conventional allopathic medicine. In fact, you know, most people of my generation growing up with like ER and different TV dramas helped like influence and shape our perception of like what we want to do in our careers. But when I was actually in the emergency department, I felt like the visits were short and you never really get to develop relationships with patients. And so I wanted to pursue a profession that I got to know my patients and then helped to be part of their lives. So that was one of the reasons that I shifted gears in my training.
I love that. And you have the old-fashioned idea that a doctor and a patient should actually have a relationship.
And that's missing right now. But to this day, I feel we silo everything. You know, you go see most family medicine practitioners, the healthcare system has shifted in a way that most primary care doctors now just triage patients and shuttle them off to the various different specialties. And no one's really the captain of the ship right now, overseeing everything. In general, that's what the primary care family doctor should be doing. But I feel like it's gotten muddled over time with health management. And it's just, you know, the idea is great, but in practicality, we've kind of lost the vision of what it really means to be healthy and, you know, how our community and the individual and health in general. So there's a lot for us to do, and I think that individuals in the community have a lot of influence and voice in this matter, too.
That's great. So let's go back to you talked about environmental factors, and you were part of this organization and are of American Academy of Environmental Medicine, and in fact, you spent several years getting a fellowship as to practice environmental medicine. How does that relate to autism? And how would our listeners be interested in a naturopathic approach to environmental medicine?
That's a big question. So I'll start with the history of environmental medicine.
Good.
To give you a framework and background on what is environmental medicine. So back in 1965, the Society of Clinical Ecologists was formed, and that is what our modern environmental medicine physicians are. We're clinical ecologists looking at different environmental influences that affect one's health. So a group of clinicians, like office-based physicians, you know, these are surgeons, ENT, they were noticing that our modern agricultural use of pesticides and introduction of food dyes and chemicals were affecting people's health. And it may not seem strange, but at the time, we didn't have, like with classic farming practices, the way that the food was produced by our grandmothers or great-grandparents at this time is much different than how it is today, where it's highly processed and manufactured. So
right.
Several doctors recognized and saw that these highly processed foods were void of the essential nutrients, and they had concerns. So they formed together and talked about these modern industrialization and changes and how it potentially could affect one's health. And the organization became very political and also advocated, spoke to Congress about, you know, their concerns. It's kind of mind-boggling because now we're seeing, you know, that there are many, many studies that link the autism hyperactivity and behavioral issues to food diets and chemicals. But back in the 40s and 60s, when these were coming to the surface, these doctors are saying, you know, this should not be introduced into our food supply. Similar to several pesticides that were approved for use and introduced widely into our food supply. Several doctors talked about it, and even there's some doctors who lost their license because they were, quote-unquote, spreading misinformation at that time.
I remember that. I was already in the field, but there was no autism, very little autism back then, and nobody related food to autism in the 60s.
Correct. And so that's, we started seeing, you know, there are descriptions of what autism is, and autism, as you and your listeners know, is a spectrum of illnesses, and a lot of children now are classified because you go to the doctor, you have these symptoms, and then for some people, yes, you get good social services when they have a diagnosis of autism. And I can say and share with your listeners that I've had many patients who had this diagnosis of autism, and either through the grapevines or seeing another child that I had helped, there are many children that I've seen, and it's, I know it sounds unreasonable or unfathomable, but I've had kids who are nonverbal until they're 18. And then until you identify the root cause of what led to their symptom presentation, then you're going to continue to suffer. So from an environmental perspective, we look at one's home, you know, we look at the birth history, the historical perspective, we look at, you know, what infections did this kid have? And so it's not just, it's a multifactorial perspective and lens in which we look at to evaluate children.
Right. And what treatment they had that might have contributed to further problems.
Yes. And so there's so many people who, and that I think one of the things that parents grab at is that when they hear that another child has gotten miraculous results from XYZ treatment, you know, parents will run to it because they want to do everything they can to help their child. And sometimes, you know, there's very good-hearted people out there in clinics that will promote whatever XY treatment, but sometimes that's not the treatment that's indicated. So
I'm so glad you said that. Because you have to take this environmental history and other history that you mentioned, which makes every child unique, and you can't just take these treatments off the shelf because it worked for someone you know. It might not be the right treatment for you, and it might not be the right time for that treatment. You might need to have a different treatment to lay a foundation so that that second treatment works.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that there's a lot of things that are promoted, but if we're talking about what is an environmental medicine doctor versus a MAPS doctor, right? An environmental medicine doctor goes through 2 years of clinical training specifically with the American Academy of Environmental Medicine, and then you do mentorship with someone who is an esteemed colleague who's practiced for many years. And the one key differentiating technique of the American Academy of Environmental Medicine is we look at the immune system. And one of the things that we offer as a treatment is immunotherapy. Specifically, back in the day, we did provocation neutralization. And my mentor, Doris Rapp and Bill Ray, they implemented this technique in their clinics. And I would say it's one of the techniques that is kind of dying down now, because not many people out there are doing it. But if there's an immune issue related to various food or environmental factors, if you don't neutralize that reaction, then it's going to continue to persist. And you might remember, Patty, like Doris Rapp back in the 80s did, she was one of the first doctors who videotaped her encounters, right? So she had this famous video, and I think she was on Phil Donahue's show at the time, where she shows a child who is sensitive to strawberries, and then she provides them a strawberry, they eat the strawberry, and they have this behavioral issue, and then she administers the correct neutralizing dose for the strawberry, and the child's calm. And so I think, you know, showing that and seeing it helped a lot of people understand that, okay, this is what it means to neutralize, you know, a food reaction, and it could be any reaction. It could be a reaction to a chemical, right? And we often overlook that, and not many doctors have the understanding that chemicals or, you know, can affect one's health, because you're taught in medical school that they're inert substances that don't have any influence on human health. But that's not our clinical experience.
That's amazing. And if you aren't a good autism detective, you don't know that that child is being exposed to chemicals, either in the home or in the food or in cleaning products or even in personal care products like shampoo or lotion. And so as an environmental medicine physician, you take a very, very in-depth history, don't you, to look at these things.
And it's essential to understand the child history, the mother's history, and also the father's history, too. Most people overlook the father or the, you know, it's just one of the things that definitely can have a significant influence. Where one lives, if you live next to a freeway, or if you're in a heavily polluted area, or if you're next to a freeway in an agricultural area, we have very strong studies to show that the incidence of autism are higher in these areas, too. So you have to think about the total load. And that, your viewers may be accustomed to that, the total load concept, where if you think of a rain barrel or, you know, the container or vessel, we're exposed to various different toxicants in our environment, from the food we eat, the air we breathe, and the water we drink, and our hobbies, too. So over time, our rain barrel overfills. And you can think about the rain barrel as your genetics. So it's the size and capacity of what you're able to handle. And a lot of children on the spectrum may have a shot glass size. So their ability to handle their toxicant load is compromised when they're already born, because there's a concept of maternal fetal transference of toxicants, and that's why my fellowship training was focused on that, the maternal fetal transference aspect, and what can people do from a preconception perspective to help improve, like, lower their burden. Because we know that when children are born, there are already hundreds of chemicals that's already circulating in their blood system. You know, and even how a child's born, is it a vaginal delivery or is it a cesarean section? So the microbiome flora is essential to developing one's immune system, too. So understanding that as a historical context is also important to how one is, you know, at the time and point of evaluation.
I'm so glad you mentioned total load. I mean, you know, that's one of the concepts that I introduced to autism, and there's a whole chapter on that in Outsmarting Autism, and that total load concept has been adopted by the autism community to look at the answer to the question, what causes autism? And it's never one thing. It's all this accumulation of load factors on a perhaps genetically susceptible, vulnerable biology. But the environmental factors are key, because we know that it takes an environmental trigger to turn on a gene that is defective or has mutated. And you work with that aspect of it too, don't you?
Yes. So a lot of times people will hear about the genetic SNPs and they want their child evaluated. And I think you can do everything. Like if you see a doctor, there's some doctors who will just run all the tests just to see. But I think the difference from an environmental perspective is having the astuteness to differentiate, okay, what's the most important test to run at this time in terms of being fiscally conservative. Because I think that, you know, there's a lot of things that we can definitely do. There's a lot of things that we can evaluate, but they all come at a significant cost. So how does the test that I'm going to run change and influence or change the therapy in which I'm going to implement? Now, if there's no, like, you know, I have no cap on one's budget, that's fine if parents want to run these tests, by all means, I'm not opposed to running tests. And I mention this because I see many patients who come in that they've read that, you know, so-and-so doctor promoting this panel, and they believe it's very important to get a test. I'm like, yes, it's very important to get tested, and it's nice to know. But given our clinical experience, right, we could start with doing a therapeutic trial and see how the child responds rather than spending thousands and thousands of dollars on testing. Would I like to save the money from the testing for treatment? And I'm not opposed to testing, so don't mistake what I'm saying. I'm just saying that I'm very careful to recognize the value of testing specifically and doing it methodically and not just running a bunch of tests for the sake of running tests.
Do you have a couple of favorites that you always run?
The test that I always run across the board is primarily the comprehensive stool test. And that test tells me a lot of inflammation, from inflammation to the diversity of the gut microbiome. So it's a very good overall
test. We need to take a break, and I think this is so important that I don't want you to shorten your response on the comprehensive stool test. So after our break, when we come back, I'd like you to go into it just a little bit and talk about what it shows, because I think it's so important, gives us so much more information.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're listening to the Autism Detective. My guest today, naturopathic physician Dr. Jessica Tran, is speaking to us from California about her practice as an wellness integrative naturopathic center. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Get the roadmap you're looking for to help those with autism. Veteran counselor Patricia Limmer's book, Outsmarting Autism, gives you all the resources you need to develop a strong foundation for a healthy lifestyle at any age. It describes many new therapies for improving communication, socialization, and behavior by treating underlying biomedical causes. Learning to prioritize therapies saves you time and money. Get answers now. Buy her book at OutsmartingAutism.com. You'll be glad you did.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Stuff, stuff, stuff. Where can I contain all of my stuff? How about this? The Container Store, the original storage and organization store. And I found their link on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page. They have containers for everything, including the kitchen, the bathroom, trash and recycling, traveling, spring cleaning, and dorm rooms. Just about everything you can think of to contain your stuff. The Container Store, right on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the Autism Detective. My guest today, Dr. Jessica Tran, is telling us about how a naturopathic physician who practices environmental medicine approaches autism. Jessica, this has been very, very helpful, I think, for people who really don't know where to turn when their child gets an autism diagnosis. And when we took the break, you had just mentioned this comprehensive stool analysis as one of your favorite tests. Can you go into that in a little more depth? How would a parent get it? would her pediatrician know how to do that test? Where would he have family have to go to get that test done?
Yes. So, honestly, the comprehensive stool analysis is best completed by a specialty lab. And there's several specialty labs available out there depending on the ordering physician's preference. And one of the reasons why the test is a good first step is it's non-invasive. It doesn't require a blood draw. And I also do a urine test for organic acids too. If, you know, there are additional resources available to do that at the same time. Otherwise, we do it at another time. So the reason why the stool test is a first good look is that it'll give me an understanding on how the child is digesting their food. Are they even absorbing their food? And you won't believe the times in which I see a result and I find that the child doesn't look like they're absorbing or digesting their food, and it could be a simple thing as they're not sitting down and chewing their food mindfully. So sometimes kids will eat, and then they're off to playing their video games, or I see this a lot now when I go out myself, where you're at a restaurant and the child has a screen in front of them, not really fully enjoying the meal. You know, you don't see the parents being attentive, and they're just really on their screen. So I think that's a disservice. I mention that because that's another thing we should talk about at another juncture.
Right.
I see it far too often, like the screen time piece.
Right.
So help me get back, loop back to that point. But that's super essential, to sit down, chew the food. The other piece is that sometimes the body is not producing the adequate amount of enzymes to adequately digest the food. And so you'll see kids with low muscle tone who may need some more amino acids. And so that's where the urine test comes in, because an organic acid test can kind of tell me comprehensively, is there a malnutrition piece coming on here that we see, or are there metabolites that indicate that there are other infections? And so putting those two together give us a very good comprehensive look without being invasive. The other thing
I love this, Jessica, because everyone is urinating, everyone is pooping, and if you can catch that those products, you don't have to terrify the child with a needle to get blood. And so analyzing those products, the urine and the stool, give us an enormous amount of information, don't they? And
they
as you said, malnutrition, it's
right.
Not what you're eating as much as what your body is absorbing from what you're eating.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the piece that we miss. We are what we eat. Right, so that's why our source of food is essential. But we also are what we absorb. And we see a lot that sometimes we're not getting the correct absorption. So we see, you know, lots of fats, then we know the child's not absorbing their fat. And then the other piece is, you know, I actually have captured, and for a lot of kids, you know, many kids are rounds and rounds of antibiotics. And then they never have their flora repleted adequately, and so sometimes I see dysbiotic flora and pathogenic bacteria that shouldn't be there, and it can also trigger symptoms of allergy. So that's another thing to also look at, and some parasites can cause behavioral issues too. And parents will say, how you clue that, you get clued into that is a cycle of behavioral issues, or like the new moon or a full moon, right? So you can also track their symptoms by that as well.
So glad you mentioned those couple of things, the antibiotics, which really do wreak havoc with the microbiome. And you can look at the stool, can't you, and analyze what's there and what's missing and modify that through some supplementation and dietary modification.
And it's really dietary modification, believe it or not. So a lot of parents, you know, may find that it's challenging to find a doctor in their community Or how do they get started? I would say the best way to start is in your home and your pantry with the diet is to choose as best as you can, finding organic food, non-genetically modified food, and follow the EWG, which is the Environmental Working Group. So you can go online, look at the Environmental Working Group's Dirty Dozen list. And so those, like strawberry is an example of a fruit, which we all love. It's like strawberry season right now. But they're one of the most toxic fruits out there.
And one of the most delicious fruits when you buy them organic. I had some this morning, and one way to tell whether they're organic or not is to, if they're red all the way through, that's a ripened on the vine organic strawberry probably. But most farmers will tell you if they use pesticides or not.
And the pesticide load, you know, the berries are very, you know, the fleshy fruits. It's very important to get that organic as best as you can. And, you know, and I think starting there, you had talked about the personal care products. I think that's also essential. We spend so much money with many products that we use, we apply to our body, and it's, you know, they're endocrine disruptors, right? And so that's another whole issue from an environmental perspective. We have precocious puberty. We have so many things that can affect the hormone and neurotransmitters. So I feel that starting at the home with the food and also personal care products is a good place to start. And then finding a doctor, if you wanted to order the stool tests or organic, finding a doctor who's trained in environmental medicine, and you mentioned MAPS, which is the Medical Academy of Pediatrics, and I had an early influence on their curriculum development and had helped craft their environmental program. And I also taught for them as well in the early beginning stages of their development. So a lot of the MAPS doctors are also trained in environmental medicine, but they wanted to have a pediatric focus. So this special academy was created so that it was primarily focused on a biomedical perspective, though. And
right.
Heavily focused on that perspective. I think one of the other things that kind of a general AAEM medicine doctor we'll also take a look at, and I know you talk about this in your book, because we bonded over this, is the vision therapy, because we don't want to overlook that piece.
Let's wait on that.
Okay, well, we have that, but that's
overlooked. We need to take another break, and we can go into that in a little bit. But let's take a little break here, and when we come back, I want you to tell us how people can find you, and what you can do, perhaps remotely. You're listening to the Autism Detective. My guest today, Jessica Tran, is telling us about environmental medicine and how important it is to look at the stool and the urine of some kids to see what the byproducts are. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Get the roadmap you're looking for to help those with autism. Veteran counselor Patricia Limmer's book, Outsmarting Autism, gives you all the resources you need to develop a strong foundation for a healthy lifestyle at any age. It describes many new therapies for improving communication, socialization, and behavior by treating underlying biomedical causes. Learning to prioritize therapies saves you time and money. Get answers now. Buy her book at OutsmartingAutism.com. You'll be glad you did.
Shh! Over here. Here's a secret for a virus-free computer. ESET. They've been a pioneer in the antivirus industry for over 25 years. 25 years of innovative, top-rated antivirus protection. ESET's award-winning security solutions provide a safe online experience for over 100 million home and business computer owners. They are so affordable, fast, and simple to use. So be gone, you blue screen of death. ESET's on my computer. If it's not on yours, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on ESET now.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the Autism Detective. My guest today, Jessica Tran, is an expert in environmental medicine and has been telling us about all the things that can affect a child's behavior and why it's so important to get to the root causes by looking at what we're eating and what we're exposed to environmentally. Jessica, you were talking about these two tests. If somebody says, but I live somewhere, there's no doctor I can go to, I've looked everywhere, is it possible to work with you remotely? And how would somebody find you?
Oh, absolutely. People can find me online at wellnessintegrative.com. And my office phone number is 949-551-8751. If anybody wanted to get more information or get in touch with our office staff to learn more about if, you know, working with me would be suitable, we do video consults and phone consults. The only caveat is if someone's remote, then unless I'm licensed in that state, I don't do prescriptive, like pharmacologicals. If it's indicated, I usually collaborate and work with other doctors in the area, too. But so I get referrals from other colleagues around the country, because I failed to mention this, but my background in my fellowship training was also focused in toxicity, like metal toxicity, and in the area of how to mobilize if somebody has a high lead, mercury, or cadmium level. And so we at our center did chelation therapy for many children using oral chelating agents and also IV chelating agents. So that's actually one of my unique area of expertise, is understanding toxicant metals and its influence all in combination with like mold and mycotoxins too. So that,
wow.
I didn't touch upon that piece, but the area of mold and mycotoxicity is also another huge thing that we often overlook, because, and that's a home thing too. So if you have water damage in the home, that can also be a culprit to one's health, to the parents, and also especially to the kids. There's so many kids where
your partner, Dr. Engels, did a segment with me, which he talked a lot about mold and how mold is an often missed component in autism.
That is great. So you can reference his, and I'm sure I'll just mention it here now, there is a distinction to mold allergy and mold toxicity. And so that's another area of our practice that we distinguish, and we address the allergy components, the immune issue, and then also the toxicity issue. So how do you mobilize the mold mycotoxins from the body? And how do you evaluate and treat that? And so
that's big.
It is big.
Yeah.
And then the overlay, too, like we all, I think back in the day, you know, people had this negativity and this assumption, you know, I think it's not the purpose of our discussion, and I hate to mention it, but back in the day, there was this notion that toxic metals in the vaccines was a culprit, which is why, you know, now we're looking at mercury-free vaccines. But there is this thing that became, and I actually was hired by a lab as a consultant to help diffuse that sentiment that metals in vaccines were causing autism. Now, I say that because, you know, there was this huge push for a lot of parents to pursue chelation therapy, and while still to this day, the number one treatment that, in terms of the Defeat Autism survey, reports that parents will say that once their child was chelated, they had the biggest improvements. It's a lot harder and challenging now to pursue chelation therapy, and it has to be done meticulously with someone who is trained. But I only mention that because we have to be careful about who you go to, who's promoting the, you know, metal chelation piece. So you definitely want to pursue someone who is MAPS trained or AEM trained or ACAM trained. And ACAM is the American College of Advancement in Medicine, They may not be actively around right now, but there's still some doctors who are trained who are exceptional. So
I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, even a naturopathic physician in some states is not licensed. Where I live in Pennsylvania, it's very controversial because they haven't done their advocacy work well enough to get recognized as a true physician. And so some people have some training but are not licensed, and it's very important to look at who you're dealing with and make sure that they have the proper credentials, to, especially in the area of chelating metals.
Yes, so I mentioned that because it's essential. Because there are kids who've been harmed, and there's a lot of protocols out there that I see online, but, you know, I'm not one to police it. So you definitely need to find someone if you're wanting to pursue that, if it's an indicated an indication. So I mentioned that because a lot of majority of my practice is through referrals from other colleagues because they've known that I've done this specialized fellowship training and my experience working with other esteemed colleagues in the community. And so essentially, through the last 10 years, a lot of my practice is seeing very complex and challenging cases from my colleagues who are around the country. So we do a lot of remote and video, and so that's another service that I offer to my colleagues.
That sounds great. So once you get the results from these a couple of tests, whatever the finances allow, because these are rarely covered by insurance, then you delve into this naturopathic treatment, which basically is helping the body do what the body was supposed to do to heal itself. And other than what we talked about, lifestyle and removing the obvious culprits and the exposures and upping the quality of the food, what are some of the other treatments that you sometimes recommend?
So I recommend often, and it's unique to my practice, the immunotherapy piece, and you can refer to Dr. Ingalls because he's the one. I'm in our office who heavily focuses on treating through using sublingual immunotherapy. Back, like, 10 years ago, I acquired this medical office from a doctor who had practiced for over 50 years, and he was one of the first doctors in our community who was seeing patients on the spectrum. And I mention that because it's great because I have a lot of children in my practice who are now actually adults, who are, some of them essentially are you can't even distinguish them from others. When I took over this practice, one of the first things that was appalling to me and astonishing was I had parents and mothers come to me and tell me that their child doesn't know they have a diagnosis of autism. And they were telling me, please don't tell my child.
Wow.
So,
that's amazing, Jessica. We have to take our last break, and I just think that's such an important subject. I want to go into it in more depth where we talk about, do you tell your child? Don't you tell your child? I mean, that is pretty amazing that that should even be controversial. So we need to take our last break. My guest today, Dr. Jessica Tran. We've covered a lot of ground with a naturopathic approach to autism. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You know, when my grandson takes a long car trip, he listens to audiobooks. A long drive seems faster, and sometimes he doesn't want to get out of the car because the book isn't finished. With over 100,000 books, Audible.com is one of the best places to get audiobooks. You can listen to a bestseller anytime, anywhere. Audible.com, your destination for the widest selection of audiobooks. Join millions of listeners. Just go to the Audible.com on HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click.
Get the roadmap you're looking for to help those with autism. Veteran counselor Patricia Limmer's book, Outsmarting Autism, gives you all the resources you need to develop a strong foundation for a healthy lifestyle at any age. It describes many new therapies for improving communication, socialization, and behavior by treating underlying biomedical causes. Learning to prioritize therapies saves you time and money. Get answers now. Buy her book at OutsmartingAutism.com. You'll be glad you did.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the Autism Detective. My guest today, Jessica Tran, naturopathic doctor in California and Arizona. Jessica, you ended the last session with a bombshell about please don't tell my child he has autism. Tell us more about that. How do you view that?
Well, I share that because it speaks to the success of the doctor who I took over the practice, who was an environmental medicine doctor, and he practiced really for more than 50 years. And I also have acquired other patients who, other doctors who've retired. And so it's amazing to see that these children who are nonverbal and the doctor who I took over, I'm successfully with many different biomedical treatments and supplements and testing and what he did from this environmental approach got them to be, you know, normalized into the public school system, and they become, they have their quirks, but they become really indistinguishable from their friends. And then they have, you know, it's really interesting because I come up with this from time to time because I still care for these children who are now adults. And it's very, it is a thing that keeps me going because when I see it, it's so beautiful. And I'm like, wow, this is why I do what I do. But some of these kids now who are, like, dating, and they come to me, and I have a couple in my practice who will sit down with me, and they continue with their low-dose allergen therapy. So that's one of the therapies in which we've found has been very remarkable in children. And so these kids have then grown up to learn when they need a tune-up or a fine-tune. So there's an individual...
They recognize it themselves.
They recognize it themselves, and they come to me, and they tell me, okay, I ate something, I had this reaction, this is what I know I need. So they come to know that. And
wow.
It's also incredible, and the conversations get very difficult when the individual sits in front of me and says, you know, I have this situation with a boyfriend, or I've been dating, and I feel like, do you think I could have autism? And all along, I know that they've been diagnosed with autism. They lost their diagnosis. You know, their parents, both parents came in and told me I can never tell them. And so what do you say, right?
Right.
Ethically, you know, I'm holding on to what the parents have told me. But I leave the individual who are like now, you know, their 20s, almost 30s, to say like, okay, and they actually bring it to me. They say, these are the symptoms of autism. And I match these symptoms. And I'm like, well, you know, and we conclude that perhaps, you know, their symptoms and the way they interact with the world may classify them as having autism. And then I help them develop the coping skills for it. And so it's been, fun and challenging at the same time to help to navigate these young adults into, like, having, like, relationships
and going to college and having a job now. So that's been really fun and rewarding to see. And it's not just one. It's like several handfuls of kids I see who are now adults and who bring this survey to me. And I'm like, yes, yeah, maybe. You know, and I go, what do your parents say? That's what I throw it back, at them.
Good response. But, yeah. You mentioned vision therapy for a minute, an earlier segment. Vision therapy is a lot about social development because we need to take visual cues and to be able to know emotionally the way somebody is feeling is often visual. And I have a lot of optometrists who have done segments with me, and I just encourage our listeners who might be new to listen to Randy Shulman or Hans Lessman or Mary Van Hoy, any of the optometrists, Susan Daniel. There's so many of them I have interviewed, and they would be somebody that you could refer to, especially for these social skills questions with some of these higher level kids who've done well biologically with you.
And part of my practice is very integrative, meaning I do collaborate with other doctors, like from the vision therapy perspective, and
Good.
Also with many osteopathic physicians in my area who are phenomenal. Like, I can't tell you I think you can't separate it. A lot of people focus on the biomedical and physiology, and that's my area of expertise, is the biochemistry, the physiology, the genetics piece. But the structural alignment piece cannot be overlooked, and neither can the vision components. And we have to do it from a very multifactorial perspective in treating the individual. Not everybody needs it, but I think it definitely needs evaluation to rule it out.
And I interviewed one of your colleagues, Dr. Latran, and she talks, she has a book on osteopathic manipulation in autism, and that is also a really helpful area that's often missed. So what I love is with you is that you recognized that you wanted to have more of a relationship with your patients, and by focusing some on the autism community, you have found a population where a relationship is really essential, and you see these patients on an ongoing basis, and often you see the whole family, right?
Correct. And so that's the other beauty of acquiring a practice that has been standing in the community for a long period of time, is seeing the grandparents, the and great-grandparents now. That's how long I've been practicing.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Multi-generational.
It's a multi-generational practice, and it's beautiful to see because I understand and know the history of all the families. And it's unique. I don't think a lot of people have that situation anymore because, like I said earlier, we've siloed everything out. Like, the pediatrician sees only the kids, but you don't understand what grandmother or grandfather did for a living or understand the dynamics. So there's more to medicine than just, aches and pains. A lot of times there are other community issues that you need to know about. Like, specifically in my community, we had this hangar fire, right, that burned for 24 days in my community, and so many people were affected by the air quality, and they didn't even realize how they were affected by it. And so strategies to focus on air filtration in the home or supporting their lungs, these are things that get overlooked by other doctors.
Wow, that's fascinating. You have to know your community. And, the quality of the air is a big deal in the community.
Yes, and the water supply, too. In my community, our water's pretty good. We have one of the best water filtration in my community. But in other areas, I have colleagues who, work in, like Flint, Michigan was an area that was heavily contaminated water. And so you have to understand what's in the community to treat the community as well.
Jessica, this has been absolutely wonderful. I can't thank you enough for coming on and sharing your depth of knowledge with us. And again, I'm so grateful for you for introducing me to your colleagues at the American Academy of Environmental Medicine. And I hope to see you again soon at the next conference that they
yes,
do.
Thank you.
And I
yes,
wish
thank you so much.
And I just wish you so much luck. I feel so honored to know you and to have you in my back pocket when I need you for consultation and for people to consult with and get referrals for if needed. And just keep on doing what you're doing. It's you're a great resource in the autism community.
Thank you so much. And I just want to shout out to you, too. I told someone about your book. And she loves it and keeps raving about how she didn't find it sooner. And I'm like, I don't know why we didn't find it sooner, but she cried reading your book. Uh-huh. And so I wanted to pass that along to you, that you're making
you.
A tremendous impact on many people's lives, and your work
thank
is
you,
very
you.
Instrumental.
All right. Well, stay in touch and enjoy the rest of the summer. Stay cool.
Thank you.